Beginning the book of Kohelet. Now the book of Kohelet is in Ketuvim. There's machloket among the commentaries whether the works of Ketuvim were written with Nevoah or Ruach HaKodesh. There was a discussion among our sages whether Kohelet belongs in the Tanakh altogether. It took generations before Chazal came to the conclusion that it does. The words of Kohelet, the words of Shlomo HaMelech, are written in a fashion that is different than any other work of Tanakh. Every other work is written with clarity. It has a message. You could read the first books of Nevuah, Yoshua Shoftim Shmuel Melachim. It seems to be a storyline, and there's a message of the prophets included in that story. You read the works of Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, what's called Nevim Achonim, Treasar, and there's a very direct message, what God wants of us. You read the other works of Ketuvim, Tehilim, has clear messages. Mishlei has clear messages. Iyov has a clear message, more or less. every other work, you see God's hand. You come to the work of Kohelet, and there's a lot of room to wonder, wait a second, this seems like a work of philosophy. He's asking questions, he's experimenting. Doesn't seem to be God's way of doing things. It seems to be very humanistic to start exploring. Wait a second, how does this work? And what's the good way in life? That doesn't seem to be the Torah's way of doing things, right? So...
מצידי לא צריך.
So when it comes to Kohelet, we have a few hardships. We have hardship number one, the whole style of the book is difficult. Hardship number two is, what's the bottom line? And why are we given the whole prelude to the bottom line? So obviously, it's not a prelude. Obviously, the book of Kohelet gives us tribulations that might bother us. It gives us answers. And this isn't just a recording, even though Shlomo HaMelech seems to write his own philosophical journey. Because Shlomo HaMelech, at age 12, was already a huge sage. So he already knew the bottom lines of the Torah. So to say that we're supposed to take the book of Kohelet literally, Shlomo HaMelech says, "Asiti li sharim v'sharot," I experimented, I brought the best opera singers, I had it all. I figured, let me see if that's the point of life. Is that really what Kohelet was thinking? Was there a point in his life that he doubted that the Torah was not all about having singers and opera all day? Obviously, that's not what's going on here. But Kohelet is taking us through a journey of exploration, and perhaps journey where much of that journey is deliberations that a person asks himself. And we have to ask ourselves also, what is Kohelet seeking in this journey? Is he seeking the truth? Is he seeking joy? Is he seeking happiness? Is he seeking contentment? Is he seeking all of the above? Meaning, it is a journey of a quest. And what is that quest? And maybe that's also part of the question that a person asks himself throughout his life. What am I seeking in life? And Kohelet will spend much of his time seemingly working in process of elimination. Well, it's not this or that or the other thing. And it's not this or that or the other thing, which is why on the surface, the book of Kohelet leaves room to question, is this God's work here? Is this the handiwork of a man who has godly inspiration if he has all these questions? And perhaps Kohelet is answering questions that we might have. There are multiple levels of interpretation in every work of Tanakh, and in the work of Kohelet this is especially so. Kohelet speaks of all the rivers flowing and the sea never filling, and even in that simple pasuk, there are multiple levels of interpretation. Is he speaking literally? Is he talking to those people who worship the sea and the rivers and refuting their claims? Is he speaking about something totally different when he speaks about the rivers spilling into the sea? So there are multiple levels of interpretation, and the way we learned Kohelet in the past was that we couldn't get away with without mentioning a few interpretations in each pasuk, and partially I feel discontentment with any pshat in Kohelet. I've spent years learning pshat after pshat after pshat, and I still don't have a path which I'm comfortable with, so that's why I feel obligated to share with you many. And in my feeling, for whatever it's worth, I haven't found one pshat that I feel comfortable going through the whole book with. So I always feel on this pasuk I could understand this pshat better, and on this pasuk I could understand that pshat better. And I don't think I have a right to do that, so I just end up sharing with you many of the pshatim. Rashi on Kohelet especially brings us a lot of midrashim. Rashi on Kohelet on Shir Shirim also. It's like a whole midrash. You look at how long the Rashi is. So we'll do our best. Now we'll try to understand the simple meaning, maybe some deeper meanings. And let's begin. We'll read it with the Ta'amim. The Ta'amim are read the same way as Shir Shirim and Rus. Ashkenazim have the same tune for Koheles. Divrei Kohelet ben David, Melech v'Yerushalayim. The words of Kohelet. What does the word Kohelet mean? So Chazal tell us this is Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech could be called Kohelet because there were always masses listening to what he has to say. They could be called Kohelet because he amassed a tremendous amount of knowledge. The Targum says something interesting here. He says, "Pitgamei nevuah." These are words of prophecy. And on the simple level, he's arguing with some Rishonim that learned that all Ksuvim were written with Ruach HaKodesh, that Shlomo, the son of David, king of Jerusalem, said. Wherever you find the word Divrei, it is rebuke, says Rashi. And so Kohelet is going to say a lot of rebuke, so to speak. He's going to have a lot of complaints. He's going to say, what's the purpose of iniquity? What's the purpose of sinning? He's going to give rebuke. Kohelet gathered all forms of wisdom and had masses listening to him. He was king over Jerusalem, and we know that Jerusalem is considered the capital of wisdom. Who is writing the book of Kohelet? So we assume this is Shlomo HaMelech. That's not so simple, because he speaks about Shlomo in third person. We know in Mishlei, Gam Eile Mishlei Shlomo, you have a section in Mishlei that says these two are the proverbs of Shlomo, and some of the commentaries say, well, the people who put together Mishlei was the people of Chizkiyahu. And when they compiled Mishlei, then they decided to add these proverbs as well to Mishlei, meaning it was like footnotes, editor's edition. So here too, it's not clear, is Shlomo HaMelech talking in Koheles, or is it the generation of Chizkiyahu or some other generation that compiled Koheles and is telling you what we're going to quote now are the words of Koheles, the son of David? You understand that if this wasn't compiled by Shlomo, that leaves a lot of room for thought. What's going on here? Meaning, the Medrash seems to say Shlomo HaMelech compiled all this, because the Medrash discusses that he composed Koheles when he was an old man, Shir Shirim when he was a young man, Mishlei when he was in middle age, or the reverse. We always think a love song is written by a teenager. So Shir Shirim was when he was young, or as we view Shir Shirim, as the long love song of a nation, the Holy of Holies, perhaps that was when he was an old man. And Koheles when he was a youngster. And Mishlei in middle age. Or perhaps, the Medrash says, they were all compiled at the same age. So it certainly seems to say it was Shlomo. Ha Havel Havelim Amar Kohelet Havel Havelim Hakol Havel. Shlomo Melech says everything is Hevel. Hevel is something that's fleeting, passing, and really we use the term Hevel for a person's breath, but really Hevel really refers to something that's passing. And Shlomo HaMelech here, some commentaries say he's introducing, he's telling you where he's headed, and he's going to, just like in the conclusion, he's going to tell you, Sof davar hakol nishma, ultimately, what's everything worth? The whole point of life is to be a God-fearing person. So too, in the beginning, he's telling you, that's where I'm headed. Everything's vain. Everything passes. There's no point in investing your strength in other things. So, that's one understanding here. Rashi quotes a medrash that says that Shlomo HaMelech says seven times Hevel over here. He is looking at all of God's creation and he is saying, what's the point? Who needs it? And to an extent, that takes a certain amount of spunk. You know, God spent 7 days creating this world. You look at it and you say, hey, what's the point in all this? So that's not so clear whether God likes it when people talk that way. But we all have points in our life when we say that. The Targum says that when Shlomo HaMelech saw that in the next generation, everything he amasses would be taken. Yeravam ben Nevat would be king over most of Israel. And he foresaw in prophecy that everything he was building wouldn't last. The wealth he was amassing, well, 10 out of 12 tribes would leave his son. The Beis HaMikdash he was building, he foresaw, would be destroyed. Chazal tell us, from the time of Yehoshua, they were already thinking of the destruction. The Gemara takes it as something very obvious, that Yehoshua knew we would be exiled and Israel would be destroyed. The only question is, when he sanctified Israel, did he do it with the intent that when it would be destroyed, it would lose its holiness or not? But the fact that he took into account that it would be destroyed is a given. And the same with the temple. Chazal say, when Shlomo HaMelech built the temple, he took into account it would be destroyed. It takes tremendous genius. The nature of humanity is that when things go well, we assume they'll always go well. When they go bad, we assume they'll always go bad. It takes a genius to see when things are going good, that it's going to change, it's going to turn bad. And Shlomo HaMelech, when he built it, the Gemara discusses, did he give it sanctity for when it would be destroyed or not? But that he took that into account is a given. So Shlomo HaMelech looks at everything he invested in, even the spiritual successes. He sees Jerusalem, the temple that will be destroyed, the nation of Israel that's going to be exiled. And he says, you know what? So everything passes. What can you build in this world that remains? What can you invest in that will last? Now that's a pretty depressing thought. He says, everything I and my father worked on, it's all going to pass. Yes.
By knowing that the temple will be destroyed, they also know that the Mashiach will come and there will be the last temple that will remain forever.
So in your Koheles, write a footnote. Shlomo HaMelech doesn't give that answer yet. Maybe that'll be his ultimate answer. Let's wait and see.
If you knew that everything will go bad, you will read Torah and you will know that the prophecy, the ultimate prophecy, is for everybody to go come back.
And who said after Mashiach it won't be destroyed again?
I don't know.
Okay. So let's wait and see. But at any rate, maybe that's going to be Shlomo's answer. Let's see. So Shlomo says, Ma'itron la'adam b'chol amalo she'yamol tachat ha'shamesh. The simple reading here is, what does a person gain with anything he toils under the sun? At the end of the day, what's the point? What do you gain? Everything passes. So you spend your life getting wealthy, in one day a person could lose it all. We all know that people have lost their wealth in a fleeting moment. So Shlomo HaMelech says, we don't have control over anything, so then what point is there in everything we work at? At the end of the day, there are so many forces that are beyond the human being's control, so what's the point? That's the simple reading here. Rashi automatically quotes us that Shemesh is a reference to Torah, which is the source of light. And Shlomo HaMelech was saying, anything you toil instead of Torah, what are you going to gain for it? So Shlomo is giving a Musar Shmuz. Well, what's the point in toiling with anything other than Torah? And the Targum here says, well, what do you gain if at the end of the day you die and everything you toil under the sun, meaning in this world, everything passes. So the only thing that you take with you is the Torah. You learn Torah, you fulfill Torah, so then you get good wages in the world to come. Oh, so Bezalel's happy. There's an answer in his direction. A generation goes, a generation comes, the sun rises, sun set, and the land keeps spinning. So you could say, okay, the next generation will come, so maybe I should work hard and have money for them. Shlomo Mel says, no. Is the earth going to last forever? At some point, Earth is going to be destroyed. There's going to be an atomic war. Everything's going to go. However it's going to be, he says, Dor olech v'dor ba, you might say, okay, so I'll go, but the next generation will enjoy if I work hard. So Shlomo asks a question, V'aretz l'olam ha'madid, you really think the land's going to last forever? No, nothing's going to be eternal. That's a simple reading. Rashi says that he's talking about the wicked. They work hard, they steal, and then they go, they pass away, and the next generation comes, and his kids end up losing it all. Do holech, the generation that stole goes away, the doban, and the next generation comes in, and they don't let the kids inherit their father who was wicked. Va'aretz l'olam amadet, you want to know who lasts forever? Those that are eretz, who are the eretz? That's the modest, the humble, those that put themselves down to the ground. The Medrash says the righteous are always called Eretz. So the Eretz is what lasts. The Tzaddikim lasts.
Can we say that can we bring the Brekavot? It's about three things that the word stands for. Torah, Avodah, and Emet Chasidim.
Okay. Why not? Yefe. So the Targum says a scary thought here. He says the good generation passes from the world because of the sins of a wicked generation that's still coming. And so the world is sticking around to see the punishment that comes to the world because of the sins of mankind. And that needs a lot of work. What does that mean? How could this generation die because there'll be a future sinful generation? So how we might understand it is that why doesn't God do away with death if there's a righteous generation? So there was the sin of Adam. But why not do away with death if this generation is righteous? The answer is because the next generation won't be. So you don't do away with death when you realize that the world has not come to fixing itself. Maybe that's what the Targum means. Maybe.
So how can we, according to this opinion, how can we understand Mavu?
What's the question?
Mavul is about generations that, you know, it's like old, uncertain generations that the world should be destroyed because they start to be more weak than the previous generations. But then after the Mavul, we have Abraham. So the world goes up again. So if you're saying that the world should be destroyed because of the
not destroyed
generations.
I'm just saying that's a reason not to abolish death. I don't think it means the world being destroyed. It means the generation passing. Why does the generation pass if the generation is righteous? So I think that's what he's answering.
So why there was a Mavoli if falling generations were righteous?
Maybe in certain respects we got to clean the slate in order to make room for that. Maybe. Okay, we'll pick up here next time as such.